ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Well, I don't know if you know this. We are headed for a real shortage of teachers. There are nearly 400,000, according to the most recent census. That's 3.3% of our workforce. As the population grows here in Australia, we're going to need significantly more teachers. Given that we don't have enough to fill the classrooms right now, I mean, teacher shortages are well documented right across the country. Who's going to teach the kids in 10, 20 or 30 years? If you've got a kid or a grandchild in kindy now, this is a very real problem for their high school years. Now, I'd like to welcome back demographer Simon Kustenmaher, who's our resident demographer here at Nightlife. He's going to take a look for us about what is going on with the numbers of teachers in this country. Hey, Simon, nice to have you back.
It's great to be back on.
So, how do we solve this national teacher shortage? Simon, why don't you tell me who your favourite teacher was at school? I mean, you grew up in Munich, so I guess the school system was a bit different.
Exactly. The school system is different, but you have the same rough experience of having some teachers that, don't leave a lasting impression, and you have other teachers that leave a positive or a negative lasting impression. And I think I had a couple of teachers that really shaped me for the better. And, you know, many decades on, I still very much remember and appreciate them. Now, my geography teacher back in high school was essentially the person who put me onto the path to what I'm doing now, to in a career in demographics, which is a subcategory of geography, academically speaking. So I'm forever grateful for those little nudges early on.
So it's important to clarify when we're talking teachers, Simon, we're referring from early childhood onwards all the way through to the end of high school, aren't we?
Exactly. For this analysis I've done, I'm looking at early childhood teachers, primary school teachers, secondary school teachers, also special need teachers. We got 23,000 of them in the country, and they are particularly worrying me because we run out of them at the fastest rate of all of the teachers. The teacher shortage is real wherever you look, every kind of school, every geography. This is very much universal. And it seems to be really tough to get young people into teaching these days as well. So the current skills shortage will get worse by the sheer fact that we have population growth, that we will overall grow the child cohort by 6% over the next 10 years. It's not all that much growth, but it's still growth. It means we'll probably need to ensure that we have at least 415,000 teachers in the country. All the while, over the coming decade, we have many, many teachers retire, which is very difficult because we then need to replace this talent. And we know who's retiring because we can just measure what share of teachers are over 55, meaning in the next 10 years, they will near retirement. They're reaching the retirement cliff. They'll fall off the retirement cliff, so to speak. And
it's probably nicer than falling off a cliff. Retiring, I would hope.
Yeah, it's a softer landing, I guess.
How many, what is that proportion then of teachers who are in that category where they will be retiring in the next 10 years?
Well, across the board, it's roughly 1 in 5. 1 in 5 teachers we will lose to retirement in the coming decade. And it's not as bad in early childhood education. It tends to be a relatively younger cohort, so we're not losing that many people to retirement. But special needs teachers, for example, 25%, 1 in 4 of them are in the 10 years nearing retirement. So they will very much be leaving the system.
Okay. Well, so leaving the system is fine if we have a steady stream of people coming into the system as well. But what's going on at that entry level when it comes to teaching?
Yeah, so this is where we just hit a demographic bottleneck, if you will. That's the case across many professions. We have a universal skills shortage almost in this country, and it's driven by demographics. So we have a very, very big cohort, the baby boomers, retiring in the coming decade. They're, of course, allowed to retire. They worked hard for many decades, so it's cool that they retire. also retirement isn't a new phenomenon. But in the past, when one cohort left the world of work, at the other end, we had usually a larger cohort entering. Not this time around. This time it's big cohort out, slightly smaller cohort in. That's an imbalance. As if this imbalance wasn't bad enough, for the next 14, 15 years, we have the largest generation of them all, the millennials born in the 80s and 90s, making babies. That means they leave the world of work at least temporarily and make the skills shortage worse on a temporary level. So filling jobs, no matter what industry you're in, is a nightmare, and some jobs are impacted more. And teaching is one of the jobs that is impacted more that I'm very nervous about. Another one, if you're playing along at home, is nursing. That's another job that I'm super pessimistic about when I'm looking at the pipeline of work in the next 10 years.
Okay. So we've got baby boomers going out. The millennials are taking time out. The cohort who are about to go to university. How sizable is that?
Yeah, these are Gen Zs, they're called. So these are the kids of Gen X. Gen X was the famously small cohort that when they were meant to be born.
We're exclusive, Simon, exclusive.
They're exclusive. They're very special because they are so small since they were born when the contraceptive pill was introduced, or they were meant to be born. They weren't born because of the contraceptive pill. So they are forever a small underdog of a cohort. Which is what it is, and you deal with this now, and therefore they can only create a small cohort as the Gen Z kids that are now entering the system. And the kids that are entering the system now, we had a couple of problems there, where the pandemic, which ensured that quite a few of those kids fell behind in school. So school retention rates aren't great at the moment. The pandemic, of course, made teaching, I would say, a less attractive job because there were so many more pressures being heaped on teachers. So it's understandable that the profession of teaching doesn't have a great retention rate, meaning some people choose to leave the industry. They don't just go to a different school if they don't like their work. They leave the industry. Maybe they stay within the broader teaching or the broader education sector, but they tend to leave the classroom. And that's difficult because if all of this that we're talking about wasn't scary enough, what we've seen is more and more responsibilities being heaped on schools because we have, well, very few one income households left in this country. If more households rely on two incomes, it means that the parents spend less time with their kids. And so they send their kids off to kindergarten, early childhood education early on. They very much look for schools that entertain the kids for longer hours in the day. So that means there's just less time to be teaching certain social skills, certain values at home. And these tasks are now being taught at school.
Right. So we're outsourcing more and more to the schools. Simon Kustamaha, our resident demography here on Nightlife, is with you tonight. We're talking about, well, the forthcoming teacher shortage. If you think it's bad now, sounds like Simon's thinking it's going to get a lot worse, partly due to, well, demographics and partly due to people not wanting to go into the profession so much. I wonder if you've got a question for Simon on this topic, 1300 800 222, maybe an observation. We've got the SMS as well, 0467 922 702. I just wanted to pick up on something you said, Simon, which I found really interesting, because you said that Generation X are now having, the millennials. No, Gen Z. I'm so confused with my generations. So Gen Z are the kids of Generation X, but they're a small cohort because Gen X was a smaller cohort. So how are the millennials so such a big cohort then? Whose kids are they?
The millennials are the kids of the baby boomers. The baby boomers are the
younger baby boomers, I guess. Gen X are the kids of the older baby boomers.
Exactly. Yeah. So generations don't perfectly align. And of course, you know, if we make a cutoff between a generation, the people that are born in 1982 are not all that different from people born in 1983. But as a large scale, we see numerical differences and we see value shifts. And the baby boomers, people born in the 18 years following the end of the Second World War, they are just this massive birth cohort, highest birth rates we ever had. There was pent up demand for baby making. There were decades of suppressed childbearing because things weren't going well. First World War, Great Depression, Second World War. Finally, once these things were in the rearview mirror, Australians felt optimistic and they had babies in large numbers. And then as those boomers became parents, they in turn created a large generation, the millennials, even though they had kids at a lower rate than their own parents had. And now the millennials are the parents of today. So if you go into any kind of maternity ward, it's millennial parents at the moment.
Okay, but so is this kind of mismatch going to continue, where you have the smaller Gen X creating another smaller generation, and then these bigger generations creating bigger generations? So it was big, small.
Very much so. So that wave of big and small, that continues. But all the while in Australia, because we are a migration nation, we keep sprinkling population onto our age pyramid, population pyramid, simply because we're constantly taking in migrants. And those migrants are almost exclusively 18 to 39 years of age. That covers 80% of migrants, that age group.
One of my texters, Micah Narrabeen, says the biggest part of the population pyramid by far in Australia at the moment is the 30 to 34-year-olds, and that boomers are tiny in comparison.
Exactly. The boomers are shrinking because they're dying. They're at the early stages of dying, the baby boomers. And the millennials still saw massive population increase. So if you heard about the last decade, we took in a record high level of migrants. From a generational perspective, these were almost exclusively millennials.
Now, one of my texters says, I've just come in on this conversation. I'm a teacher of mid-primary age students. I love the teaching part. I hate the personal development sessions and the admin tasks. I'm nearly 59, so on the outward end of my career. Yeah, JJ, you're off onto the retirement cliff, I'm sure. But this is one of the problems, and you just hear it time and time again from teachers, Simon, is that while the teaching might be fine, it's everything else that you have to do, the admin tasks and, you know, meeting the KPIs, that is causing teachers to go, is this really worth it?
Exactly. And I want to say almost the stereotypical teacher chose this profession because that's their calling. They see the obvious social and societal importance of this job. And so they dedicate their career to this. That makes perfect sense. And then they're teaching the one-on-one work with the young people, that gets watered down more and more by admin tasks that people hate. So I never, ever, when I work with schools, I never, ever get positive feedback about all those additional responsibilities. Teachers hate it. And if you want to encourage more people into teaching, which is an uphill battle to begin with, you need to make the job more attractive. And one way that the school system has to offer is to make the job just nicer, just to make sure that only the tasks that are actually desired are part of the job, and that all the other stuff somehow gets automated away, that we just maybe don't get that obsessed about the other parts of teaching, that we find other people to take the roles of the additional challenges that we put on schools. We want teachers to teach, and we want the job to be an attractive one, because otherwise we don't get the talent into the pipeline, and it is absolutely god-awful for society in the long run if we don't have adequate teaching levels, staffing levels in schools.
Sue on the SMS says, I work in the education system. I could not recommend it as a career for anyone. Parents believe they can do the job and therefore have no respect for teachers. Children, as a generalisation I know, don't even use basic manners as in please and thank you. And this is in primary school, says Sue. Soph says, I was talked out of teaching by my parents. Thank goodness I listened. The advent of smartphones, which are a huge distraction for kids, combined with parental outsourcing and a lack of discipline, make teaching sound like a dreadful career choice. Gosh, and Simon, I know smartphones is something that, you picked up in some of the analysis that you've been doing, because you're saying a lot of kids spend their time when they're not at school or on social media and engaging in all these digital technologies, and it's that time at school when they're often most free of those influences, and that time becomes really important because of that.
Absolutely. So any school that does not have a no phone policy is just god awful. They must stop this right now. Phones have no place whatsoever in school. Lock them away. Don't trust students. It's just that simple. Free them from this pressure of the phone. There's endless research on this constant distraction of phones, that it minimizes social connectivity that you have in schools. Schools enable social connectivity. A school must increase the amount of free time, of play time, free play, where you learn social interactions. This must be increased, and phones must be away the whole time. I sound very old when I say this, but there is no research out there whatsoever that speaks positively about young people using phones. And young people and technology addiction is very predictable, the mental health outcomes. So when we talk about image-based social media, something like Instagram, you might as well give your kids cigarettes and go start smoking.
Simon, I know you've got young kids. They're getting a phone when they're allowed to vote at 18.
I have a 4-year-old and a 4-month-old. Thank God they're not demanding phones, and thank God we can still very, very easily minimize screen time to close to nothing. But that will change due to social pressures. And so your kids will be on social media. They will have phones. But managing the screen time is very hard. And the easiest way is for school, where they spend a bucket load of their time, to make this radically phone free. There's, I think, no alternative. Like, I need to be very strict about this. All research that I've seen says get phones out of schools. And if it's about parents being nervous that they can't reach their beloved children all the time, it's just for the parents to just suck it up, to be honest. The school will take care of your kids, whether you have 24-hour access to them or not.
Simon Kustamaha from the Demographics Group is here. We're taking a look at teacher shortages in the future. This from Maria. Some teachers say they leave because of the pressures of the workload. Perhaps there's a need for more teacher aides or assistants to be employed to assist with the admin and the paperwork. And someone's got a question saying, how has COVID affected and continues to affect the retention and recruitment of teachers given the health and safety issues? Have you got some thoughts on that, Simon?
Well, so I don't have hard data on what's going on there. I know that school retention rates, student retention rates got much worse, that we lost probably a generation of students that are not returning to the workforce or to the school system. And we then need to buffer that fall by helping them into the workforce through other means. That's rough. That's a rough challenge. So all those agencies that assist with the introduction to the workforce, they will be much needed in the coming decade to deal with the COVID aftermath. So that's on the student side. I know that teachers, this is anecdotal, so I don't have hard data here. This is teachers being burned out, just thinking that's too much. They didn't sign up for all this online stuff and the pressures that come with it. And I think it made things worse. But again, we come here to a social component, that the skills shortage, the burnout of schools, they're not evenly distributed across the full social income spectrum, if you will. It is very much the low-income schools that will be hit the hardest by the teacher shortage.
And you'd expect the regional schools as well, where getting teachers has always been a challenge.
Very much so. So private schools have a better chance of paying higher incomes, better pay, and so they are more likely than public schools to get the right staffing levels. That benefits the rich part of society, or doesn't hurt the rich part of society, whereas it is the low-income schools that will be hit the hardest, and regional schools. And it's particularly bad if you have a low-income area with relatively high house prices, because maybe the regional town saw a bit of population growth during the pandemic. It didn't prepare for enough housing stock to come online. House prices, rents go up. And then you go, why would I teach there? It makes financially no sense. It's a rough job. I need to resettle, relocate to a regional area that I don't know. It's not an attractive option. And then people don't come, and those schools will be particularly hard to staff.
Now, Simon, one of the ways Australia has been solving its skills shortages problems for many years now is migration. Let's, you know, set up special visas. Let's get people in. People are desperate to come to Australia, so let's, you know, bring them in to do this. Can we solve the teacher shortage through migration?
Well, migration will definitely play a role. I would guess that it has a part, I'm convinced that we will need to train our teachers in-house. There is so much local knowledge that is embedded in teaching. There is language skills that are in teaching even more, much more important, to be honest, than in other professions, because you literally are tasked with educating your students. So the right language skills are important. Let's say you really check for language skills. Of course, you can take teachers in. But if we just look at the current share of the workforce in different teaching jobs, the nationwide average is a third. 33% of all workers are born overseas in Australia. And in primary school teachers, that's only 15%. So somehow we don't import primary school teachers from overseas. So you can either see this as an opportunity and say, well, if we really buckle down and we get, primary school teachers with great English skills, or maybe then migration can be a solution. And in early childhood, we already move close to 30% of teachers being from overseas. So there's a difference within the teaching category. But the problem with teaching and getting migrants in is that we overestimate the skilled migration intake in this country. So on average, over the last decade, we take in only 36 or 37,000 skilled migrants, people that are here on a skilled migration visa. And since there's a skills shortage in every industry, it is every industry that lobbies really, really hard to the government to put their jobs onto the skills shortage. And of course, healthcare jobs win, mining jobs always win because they create much more money than any other industry. So it's hard to argue that we get thousands of teachers onto this very limited list where we can essentially order teachers. So it will be a case of educating them in-house.
Yeah. So Simon, you said 37,000 people coming in on the skilled migration programs, and yet we hear of figures with at least a couple of 100,000 migrants coming into Australia. Yep. How does that all pan out? I imagine a lot on student visas then.
Yeah, so this is the 10-year average. So 10-year averages, we take in around 470,000 people. This is arrivals, people that arrive in the country. There are also people leaving. And then if you take the net terms, you go, well, we grow our workforce stock by 37,000 people. And the net migration intake overall is 215,000. And Over a third of all migrants are international students because they are just, financially speaking, crazy cash cows. So no government is going to minimize international students just because they subsidize the education system. If you were to diminish international student numbers, you'd need to raise taxes to finance, to subsidize the uni system. And nobody is keen on that.
You mean like it used to be? Before the international students came in.
Exactly. And we kind of pushed universities to a degree where many universities are about half international students because we took away their funding. And as we took funding away, they increased to charge high fees for international education, and then they could finance the system. So if you wanted to decrease migration, the most plausible sector would be international students, that you minimize those. But I'm not sure what's gained then, because you're shooting yourself in the leg financially. International students make a lot of money. And on the housing market, they only occupy a very specific niche product that, of course, does need to be created. But that's, I don't see international student numbers being reduced dramatically. There will be the occasional political gesturing to drive the numbers down a bit, but overall, we'll deal with high migration intake. And yet, even though we have this high migration intake, the skilled component in net terms is only 37,000.
That amazes me. I had always thought that it was probably substantially higher than that, Simon. Simon Kustamaha is here. He's from the demographics group. We're having a look at teacher shortages. But I do have a question sort of back on our generational issues, because Fergus says now we've had Gen Z. What comes next? I have heard people try to get Gen Alpha up and running. Is that happening? Or?
That's what we currently are using, because if you run out of letters in the alphabet with Gen Z after Gen Z, you just have to find a new alphabet. And so we go to our Greek friends, and I think over the next couple of centuries, we'll learn the Greek alphabet really well.
Who decides this? Is there like a kind of panel of international demographers who goes, we're going with Alpha? Yeah, why can't someone come up with something creative?
There is baby boomers, millennials. These are kind of creative terms. And sometimes they just stick because there has been some sort of cultural event. In Germany, Gen X is not called Gen X, for example. They're called Generation Golf, after the Volkswagen Golf car, which was the quintessential car of this generation. So, and there was a book written called Generation Golf. So every now and then something surprising sticks across the world. But yeah, in lieu of that, we just essentially number generations.
Yeah. Now, a few other comments. Someone says, look, after a 36-year teaching career, I've seen teacher pay decline significantly compared to non-skilled professions and other skilled professions. Peter's given us a call who says teacher numbers are falling because of mismanagement of economic policies. Another one saying, teachers' aides hate paperwork too. More training and simplified systems are required. Also, as a school counsellor for many difficult kids, I had a break of 20 years. I couldn't believe the change. So many kids, there have been drugs and other issues involved and making it really difficult. And Robin saying, teaching, this is only one of traditional vocations in our society. A lot of other vocations are in the same situation and need a complete examination to continue into the future. Simon, do you think our politicians are aware of what you see as being this really forthcoming crisis in teaching?
Oh, absolutely. So any politician dealing with education knows about the difficulties of getting staff in. It's, I would argue, probably the biggest problem at the moment, because you just need enough staff to run a school. It's very, very clear. And so the idea of introducing teaching aides or teacher aides, that's one way of getting, lower qualified professionals into the system to ease the teaching load. But that ultimately assumes that you have people available.
And as you said, we've got skill shortages absolutely all over the place. Hey, Simon, we will have to wrap it there. Thank you so much for being on Nightlife, and we'll get you back in about 4 weeks' time to look at another issue through your demographic eyes.
Oh, fantastic. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Talk to you then. Simon Kustenmaher is the founder of the Demographics Group, joins us regularly here on Nightlife to take a look at, well, demography and how it's affecting all of our lives.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.